It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
This is the Fox News Rundown Extra. I'm Dave Anthony. Today, a legal case that is unprecedented out of Michigan, where a school shooter's parents are being held criminally responsible for what their son did back in November of 2021, when Ethan Crumbly opened fire at Oxford High, killing 4 students and injuring 7 other people. He was 15 at the time and carried out that shooting spree hours after his mom and dad were at the school, meeting with officials about Ethan's disturbing writings and drawings. Now, they left that day. Ethan was allowed to stay. Nobody checked his backpack. It had a gun that his father had bought days earlier. So James Crumbly, whose trial started the other day, is charged with 4 counts of involuntary manslaughter, the same charges Ethan's mom, Jennifer Crumbly, was convicted on last month. They are also accused of not doing enough to treat their son's mental illness. She's facing prison time. Her son will be behind bars for life with no chance at parole after pleading guilty to murder. And the other day, we talked about the repercussions of this Crumbly case with Jonathan Turley, a law professor and constitutional expert. But the conversation was too long to fit into our regular rundown podcast on Wednesday, so we had to trim. Well, we have picked up the pieces. We put them all back in for you to hear today. And as always, we hope you like the extra and invite you to listen to these full interviews every weekend and to the rundown every weekday. And now, after I know it was a very long setup, here is Jonathan Turley on the Fox News Rundown Extra. Joining us again on the Fox News Rundown is Professor Jonathan Turley, George Washington University professor of law, also a Fox News contributor, constitutional expert. We've used and spoken to the professor about all kinds of different things related to the Supreme Court and the presidential race. Today, a different story altogether, a different case altogether. It relates to the trial getting started with jury selection in Michigan for James Crumbly. His son, Ethan, in 2021, went on a killing spree at Oxford High School in Michigan. 4 students were killed, 7 others injured. Ethan Crumbly pleaded guilty and is now in prison for life. His mother, Jennifer Crumbly, a few weeks ago, convicted of involuntary manslaughter, the first parent held criminally responsible for their child's school shooting. And now it's James's turn. He's the father. That sets it up. Professor, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure.
This is part 2 of the same case. How big and how important of a criminal case are we dealing with the Crumblies in Michigan?
Well, the most troubling case, I think, was Jennifer Crumbly's case, because she was largely convicted of being a bad mother. You know, there were indications that her son was disturbed. And that is certainly something that has generated a great deal of condemnation about how they responded to it. And yet the prosecutors loaded up the trial with attacks about the parents, about possible affairs, the fact the house was unkept, the lack of attention to child rearing. It did raise serious concerns for many of us to criminalize those types of failings. With the father, the trial is likely to be different in one major respect. James Crumbly is accused of purchasing the weapon that was used in this shooting. And that is more of a traditional type of action for this type of charge. You know, he's being accused of effectively facilitating, even if it's negligent or reckless, the shooting itself.
Now, that gun, Ethan really wanted it, and his father said okay, and they went on a Black Friday shopping trip and got the gun. And James Crumbly insists that he had hidden it away and put the ammunition in a different place. The issue becomes the storage of this firearm, correct?
It does. You know, that he was required under law to keep this as an unloaded weapon and secure. How secure it was will be one of the questions. But he has insisted that he did take steps along these lines. What's notable is that part of his former wife's trial was what's a notable distinction from the earlier trial is that he is not accused of receiving worrisome texts from his son. Those messages went to the boy's mother. So this is going to focus almost entirely upon the fact that he purchased this gun really for his son and then failed to properly secure it. The question is whether he can be viewed as committing a criminal act for not going beyond what's required under state law, or taking insufficient efforts, even if he did try to secure the weapon.
Okay. When you, though, look at this case, he does face similar involuntary manslaughter charges. The parenting issue is going to be brought up again. He is mentioned. For instance, Ethan Crumbly, there is a journal entry that he wrote that he's going to cause the biggest school shooting in Michigan's history. I will kill everyone I see. I have fully mentally lost it after years of fighting my dark side. My parents won't listen to me about help or a therapist. I have zero help. He doesn't say his mother. He says parents.
Yes, and there is also indications that he was obviously aware of his son's problems. There was one communication from him asking whether his son had been given Xanax one night to avoid a meltdown. So he was clearly aware that this was a troubled kid. The question for many of us in looking at these two trials is where to draw this line. Unfortunately, there are millions of families who are dealing with loved ones with mental illness. That is particularly prevalent today. It's certainly increased among the very young. Criminalizing these tragedies will not necessarily help in that. These parents often find that they have a system that doesn't offer much support. It can be very difficult to get children into supervised care or overnight treatment. There are very few beds available in many states. Many families like this one are not well off. They have limited funds. So the question again is, where do you draw the line here? No one is questioning whether these parents were aware of their child's mental problems. It comes down to what is required criminally of parents. What can they be criminally held liable for not doing?
Okay.
And I think that really the jury is still out on that question. Even though you had a jury return a guilty verdict against this mother, I think the jury in the court of public opinion is quite divided. There's a lot of parents that have experienced great trauma with teenagers. They're trying to do their best. They're probably doing better than the Crumblies were in terms of care. But anyone who's gone through that is likely to say that the criminal code is not the way to address it.
Fox News Radio on demand on the Fox News app. Download the app and just click listen. When you swipe left, you can listen to your favorite Fox News talk shows live. Swipe right for the latest Fox News Radio newscasts on demand. Fox News Radio on the Fox News app. Download it today.
Now, the people who were victimized by this crime, they see that on the day of the school shooting, November 30 in 2021, the Crumblies are in the school the morning of. They are talking to officials, the guidance people and people in the school, and they're shown disturbing drawings and disturbing writings that their son had. And in the end, they leave. Ethan stays in school, No one checks the backpack, the gun's inside, and he goes on the shooting spree. If you are victimized by this crime, you'll want the parents to be held accountable, wouldn't you?
Oh, I'm sure I would. If my child was lost in this, I would want retribution.
Would you want the school held accountable? I mean, they left him there. Nobody checked the backpack.
Well, the question is not how one would feel as a parent, but how we handle not just this, but future cases. There's no indication that the parents knew that their son was going to commit this type of act. What they knew is that they had a very unstable son, that he had made threats to others. Did they act appropriately? I don't think they did. I think that they were negligent as parents in what they did. But I'm still quite divided about using the criminal code for this purpose. I think that you will find thousands of cases every year where high school and even elementary schools have made threats against kids in their class or others, even family members. Parents often have to try to deal with that as best they can. There's not really grounds to arrest when someone makes necessarily this type of statement. If there's a threat against an individual, the police can step in.
But these are usually juveniles anyway, right?
I'm sorry?
They're usually juveniles who are making the threats anyway, right?
They are. And so parents are in a very difficult position. This is not excusing these two parents. I don't think that they did what they could have done. But I think it's very easy to turn to the criminal code and say, well, because the shooting occurred, you should also be held responsible in terms of a criminal complaint. Now, keep in mind, there's also civil liability that can come. You know, parents can sue these parents for their role in failing to take action. I would be more comfortable with civil liability than I would criminal liability.
But just suing them doesn't, for some people, they think, no, there has to be more than that. Now, obviously, people believe that. The prosecutors believe that.
Yeah, I can understand that. And when I first read the account of what these parents done, I was very upset, like many parents. I have to be honest. I think that despite the many times I've looked at these complaints and looked at what happened in the trial, I still don't know how the prosecutors are delineating the line between bad parenting and criminal conduct. And that's a very dangerous thing for parents with millions of families facing these traumatic situations.
Because this is a precedent-setting situation, correct?
It certainly is.
So let's go to this trial in another way. Once things get underway, there is a roadmap. Obviously, the prosecution succeeded in Jennifer Crumbly's case. Defense attorneys also have the same roadmap. They see how her side lost. They see how prosecutors won. Who benefits in trial number two from that roadmap, or is it equal?
I think the prosecutors benefit more only in this sense. I think that the first trial was the more difficult trial to make for prosecutors. This one has an actual act that facilitated the shooting.
The gun, right.
Absolutely. So this has a more traditional feel. It'll be much more difficult for the defense. The fact that the defense couldn't stick the landing on the first trial, it means that they're going to have an even harder time here. Now, how the first trial stands up on appeal is going to be an interesting question. You know, juries are given a lot of deference by the courts in making these determinations. But as I've said, there still are some threshold questions that concern many of us. I think that the father has fewer of those questions because of the action he took. He had a child who had very serious mental illness, and I think he knew that. I think from the communications, he was aware that his son was highly unstable. To facilitate the purchase of a gun, even one that you keep in your own room, is still a very dangerous act to take. I've spoken with parents that have teenagers who have gone through these types of traumatic situations. Most of them remove all the guns from the house, their own guns as gun owners. They don't want to even risk the possibility that their child could take his or her own life, let alone harm others. Here you've got a father who went out on a Black Friday sale and purchased this gun. Now, I think what he's going to argue is that this was all an effort to try to reframe the situation for his son, to get him involved in some more positive types of feedback, that this is a privilege that can be extended or taken away in terms of access to the gun to go to shooting ranges, et cetera, that the father is trying to build on the son's interests and have something that he could potentially do with his son. All of that is plausible, except for the fact that he was aware that his son was not mentally stable. And this is a heck of a risk, even if you secure the gun properly.
Now, Professor, in Jennifer Crumbly's trial, she testified. And to some, she came across kind of cold. And in the testimony and in one of the things that has been brought up is that after the shootings, James Crumbly was more emotional, more upset over what happened than she was. In her trial, they brought up extramarital affairs. She was interested in horse hobbies or whatever it was and came across as distant. If he testifies, he might be more emotional.
I couldn't understand the last part. If who testifies?
If James Crumbly testifies, he could be more emotional, right? If James Crumbly testifies, he could be more emotional in his own defense than she was. Would that be helpful?
Well, I do think that in a case like this, you have to, as a defense counsel, resist the temptation to play it safe. Most defense counsel are heavily inclined to keeping their client off the stand. It minimizes the risk of serious injury being done through testimony. But that minimization of risk helps the attorney sometimes more than the client. You can't be blamed for something that didn't happen. In a case like this, I would very likely put my client on the stand. I think the jury needs to hear from him because he did take this action. He did secure the weapon. They need to know why. And he needs to speak directly at them, to look at them and speak to them as a father who found himself in a very difficult position, as someone that you might not agree with, but you can understand why he was trying to develop these connections with his son. That may not succeed, but in my view, it may hold the only hope that he has.
In the end, what is the best ground for appeal? She's already been convicted. Maybe he will be. What's the best grounds for appeal?
I think that frankly, he has fewer grounds to appeal than his wife. Because of the action that he took. But in some ways, the appeals will be similar. The degree into which you're criminalizing bad parenting, he will focus on the fact that the prosecutors are assigning a certain recklessness or negligence to how he secured the guns, but that he did so in compliance with state law. The question is, can you be required to do even more? The answer to that is probably yes. I mean, even if the state law says you have to do A, B, and C, many jurors will feel that if you've got a troubled child in the house, you probably should do, you know, E, F, and G. I mean, that you need to go beyond that, given what you're looking at. You can't just do the bare minimum.
Jonathan Turley, George Washington University Professor of Law, Fox News contributor. Very interesting case. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.
I'm Dana Perino. This week on Perino on Politics, I'm joined by founder and executive director of Power the Future, Daniel Turner, for a look at how we can advocate for a cleaner earth while strengthening U.S. energy independence. Available now on foxnewspodcast.com.